publicist for the Dodgers, Harold Parrott, ghostwrites a story about this. In addition, McPhail comes to a Yankee-Dodger exhibition game and has two kind of known gamblers either close or near his Yankee box. And DeRosa makes a comment that, well, it seems that what's okay for owners isn't okay for managers. This kind of infuriates. McPhail was a hot-tempered individual, volatile individual. And this infuriates McPhail, and McPhail starts ranting and raving to Cappy Chandler that something has to be done about it. Now, while this is all going on, Leo is involved with Lorraine Day. Lorraine is married. She's a movie actress. Leo, basically, in his autobiography, talks about this platonic relationship that began while Lorraine was married. But this relationship develops, and both Lorraine's husband filed for divorce. He names DeRosa. Then Lorraine files for divorce. They decide that they can't wait the normal time period in California, so they go down to Juarez. Lorraine gets a quickie divorce in Mexico. They hop across the border and get married in El Paso. This marriage is recognized all over except for California, so Leo's got to stay out of California for a while. But while this is all going on, and those of you from northern cities recognize the power of the Catholic Church back in the 40s and the 50s, Leo really draws the anger of the Catholic Church, and the Brooklyn CYO, Catholic Youth Organization, pulls out of the Knothole Gang. How many of you remember Happy Felton, the Knothole Gang in New York City? Well, they pull out of the Knothole Gang, and well, to make a long story short, Happy starts reviewing all this on April 9th, 1947. He suspends DeRosa for a year. This is quite shocking. In fact, McPhail was, I can't believe he's actually doing this. I mean, there's a lot of innuendos and connections, etc. Really nothing that DeRosa has done that has jeopardized the game in any way, shape, or form. But he gets suspended for a year. And Bert Schotten becomes the manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Dodgers win the pennant, and we get to the next year. Now, DeRosa does indeed come back in 1948. But before DeRosa comes back, there's some problems with Eddie Stanky and Branch Rickey. Now, DeRosa gets caught in the middle. Stanky's one of his boys. And Rickey expects DeRosa, and there's a good relationship between Rickey and DeRosa. Rickey expects DeRosa to back up management in any dealings with players. So DeRosa gets caught in the middle. And to make a long story short, both Rickey and Stanky get angry at Leo for not sticking up for either one of them, because Leo kind of plays it in the middle. And Rickey sends Stanky to Boston. He sells Stanky to Boston. And as a result, Rickey doesn't necessarily have the same comfort level with Leo. And then the Dodgers start poorly in 1948. And on July 4th, 1948, Rickey asked Harold Parrott, who's the publicist for the Dodgers. By the way, it was Parrott that actually wrote the article about Larry McPhail. DeRosa didn't realize anything was going on, but stood behind that article and did indeed, he said he wrote that. Well, he asked Parrott to fire, or asked DeRosa to resign on July 4th. DeRosa is all right, I'm not going to resign. And then actually the Dodgers start playing well. But Stoneham, this is where Horace Stoneham comes into the game. And there is some confusion about actually how DeRosa becomes manager of there's the popular folklore, and then that's what reported in the press the following day. The New York Times quotes Stoneham as saying, Ott resigned in the morning of July 19th, and actually Ott suggests to Stoneham that he get Leo as manager. Now, I'm not quite sure how Ott realizes DeRosa might be in hot water with Rickey, but according to the New York Times article, Stoneham calls the National League president, gets clearance to talk to Rickey, and then calls Rickey. Popular folklore has it that Stoneham does indeed call Rickey, but asks for Bert Schotten to be the manager of the Giants. And Rickey, wanting to get rid of DeRosa, kind of says, I got plans for Schotten. But how about Leo? Well, to make a long story short, Leo becomes the manager of the Giants, and so the real question is, did Stoneham really ask for John, or did he ask for Leo? And that's kind of an interesting... Fans are stunned. This causes a great deal of consternation in the city of New York. Brooklyn fans are somewhat divided, although it seems that some are upset that Leo's leaving, some are happy that Leo's leaving. Giant fans are very sad. Mel Ott was kind of one of their idols, a legendary home run hitter for the Giants, and Giants fans are saddened by the fact that Mel Ott is leaving. The New York Times reports that Charlie Cefalo, who's the number one fan according to the New York Times, I guess he went to every game. He's not going to the Polo Grounds anymore now that Leo's manager. And when asked by a reporter, well, what if Leo brings a pennant? He responded, that's impossible for Leo winning the pennant with the Giants. Interestingly, the Giant players are rather silent about this. There is one fan, though, that reports, I'm going to go and follow Leo. I'm going to abandon the Dodgers and become a Giant fan. One of the things that's kind of interesting, Leo thought he was the idol of all of Brooklyn, even after becoming the Giants manager, and is amazed and shocked when he returns to Ebbets Field the following week with a Giant outfit on and he's loudly booed. Leo points out that was rather surprising in his autobiography. What is Leo's plans for the Giants? Well, he really doesn't say much. The first game the Giants are supposed to play with Leo's manager is a night game in Pittsburgh. That gets rained out. And so on the flight back, Leo talks to some reporters, and he's going to spark the club into greater effort. He says nothing about remaking the Giants at this time. He's not going to change the coaches, even though he has a couple of problems with some of the coaches. He's going to straighten out the Giants' pitching situation. Now, this is kind of interesting because this is like July 20th, 1948. Bobby Thompson can't be happy when Leo points out that he's not necessarily the greatest outfielder in the world. And he might experiment with Bobby at third base. It's interesting, given what happens in 1951, that he raises this issue back in 1948. After the 1948 season, and of course this is a famous quote by Leo, Stoneham asked Leo, what should we do? And what Leo responds to Stoneham, back up the truck. Leo really doesn't like the type of team he's inherited. He's got Johnny Mize, Walker Cooper, Willard Marshall, Sid Gordon, a lot of slow, but individuals hit a lot of home runs. In fact, in 1947, the Giants set a major league record with the most home runs for a team with 221 home runs. He doesn't necessarily like Buddy Kerr, the shortstop, who's one of Horace Stoneham's favorites. He doesn't feel he has the range to play shortstop. They're not a team that could steal, bunt, hit and run. And so, in other words, it kind of forces Leo to play one type of baseball, while Leo would like to use all the potential offensive weapons that possibly he can employ to win a game. So Stoneham starts relenting, but what DeRosa plans to do is to convince Stoneham that significant change is necessary, which takes 1948 and most of 1949. And then the things start happening. Johnny Mize gets sold to the Yankees, because Mize contributes significantly to the Yankees. Walker Cooper is traded to the Cincinnati Reds. Cooper really didn't like DeRosa, for Ray Mueller. In the offseason after 1949, DeRosa and the Giants become aware that Alvin Dahl, the shortstop for the Boston Braves, won the World Championship in 1948 with Dahl at shortstop, is available. Dahl and Stanky are not necessarily happy with Billy Southworth, the manager of the Braves. Laissez-faire, drinking a bit. They wasn't necessarily thinking that Billy was really giving the Braves the proper direction. So Dahl is on the market as a result of this. And one of the interesting things is Leo really is the de facto general manager of the Giants. If you look at baseballreference.com and look at the Giants history, you'll see that Chub Feeney, who I believe is Stoneham's nephew, is listed as the general manager, but really Stoneham kind of makes a lot of the moves and decisions for the Giants. So what happens is Leo is convincing Stoneham to make these moves, and they go into these trade negotiations with the Braves, and it's Leo who's the chief negotiator for the Giants. And in the midst of this negotiation, Leo is, he's a second baseman, and he's talking possibly about Sibby Sisti coming over from the Braves. Leo finds out that Eddie Stanky is also available. The Braves want to get rid of both Doc and Stanky. And DeRocher is delighted, makes the move, trades Sid Gordon, Willard Marshall, Buddy Kerr, and Red Webb for Alvin Doc and Eddie Stanky. He really steals both Doc and Stanky, giving these plotting outfielders to the Braves. Giant fans aren't necessarily happy about this trade because they kind of love. Sid Gordon was, from, I believe, from Brooklyn, popular Giant player. Leo orchestrates the deal, and one of the things that Stoneham really regrets is letting Buddy Kerr go and really doesn't necessarily like Stanky, but quickly acquiesces to coming over. Now, 1950 and 1951, Leo's starting to have his type of team, but the pitching staff is still a little depleted. But Magley has come back from the Mexican League, and he starts pitching well and becomes a starter. And then Jim Hearn comes over from the St. Louis Cardinals. And I believe if I remember right, Hearn was kind of a reliever with the Cardinals, but they bring him over and they start him starting with the Giants, and he starts pitching well. Now, this is where DeRocher really pulls off some very interesting moves. He doesn't really have a first baseman, but he's got this very good outfielder, Whitey Lockwood. He doesn't look like a typical first baseman for some reason. And this is interesting. Tom Kiernan writes about this in his book, Miracle Coogan's Bluff, in an interview with Bill Rigby. The Giants didn't necessarily understand what DeRocher was doing by moving Lockwood to first base, but it worked. Lockwood turns out to be an excellent first baseman, and in fact, in that famous ninth inning, gets the double before Thompson hits the home run. Thompson again now gets moved to third base. Hank Thompson has some problems. So he moves Bobby Thompson to third base. The shot heard around the world. Leo's kind of team wins the pennant, but the Yankees win the World Series. You know, God's always on the side of the Yankees. There was that famous rainstorm on the Sunday when the Giants had the Yankees down 2-1. That caused a little bit of problem for me as a Giants fan. 52 sees Stanky departing, Mays joining the Army, and Monty Irvin breaking his ankle. The Giants hang close. Leo really does a good job in 1952. They only lose the pennant by 4.5 games. 53 is a lost season, and Leo kind of loses focus. In fact, Leo asked and has Giant players actually managing some of the games during that period. Leo, as you'll see later, is not necessarily motivated when a team doesn't have a chance to win the pennant. In 1954, I'll just quickly go through this because I got a 5-minute signal. Giants get or steal Antonelli and Little from the Braves, again the Braves, but now it's the Milwaukee Braves, for Bobby Thompson. Thompson's had two good years in 52 and 53, and the Braves needed an outfielder. And they had a surplus of pitching. Willie returns from the Army. Don Mueller has a great season, almost wins the batting title, loses out to Mays on the last day. Pitching staff is Antonelli, Magley, and Gomez, Marv Grissom, and Wilhelm. The amazing thing about DeRocher's managing in 54 was his use of Dusty Rhodes. He kept Dusty well-oiled during the season and also the World Series, and Dusty responds with a lot of clutch pinch hits. And also certain playing, spot playing during, and of course we all know what he did in the 1954 World Series. But Leo convinces the Giants that they can really do it and win it all. And in fact, they dominate the Indians, except of course that first game, which Chinese home run, I guess you can still say Chinese home run, can you? Against the Indians by Dusty Rhodes. Leo has achieved his world championship, two pennants, and just an amazing run these 5 years with the Giants. Leo's management style. A lot of folks point out his former players, and I did talk to Bobby Thompson once. Leo would do anything to contribute to winning a game. So all the stories about the telescope in 1951, if Leo realized he could do that and that helped the Giants, he certainly would have done it. Leo wanted to use every aspect of offense to win the game. So that's why he wanted his kind of team. He didn't like this plotting group that he inherited in 1947. He considered himself a motivational psychologist. Each of his 25 players needed a certain approach, and Leo was sharp enough to figure out what that approach was. Certain players would need constant needling. In fact, they even went beyond needling. Judith Tester, in her biography of Sal Magley, talks about how DeRosa continually needled and got on Magley's case. And DeRosa says, with respect to Magley, you had to needle him, you had to make him mad. Mueller, Evars, and Lachlan received somewhat similar treatment. Mays, of course, it's well documented, he needed constant praise and reassurance and told that he belonged in the major leagues. One time he went up to Leo after he was having that rough start and said, "We got to send me down." And Leo said, "No, you're staying here." Doc and Irvin were left alone. Now, one of the more interesting things I think about Leo is he didn't necessarily have a high degree of patience. If things weren't working, Leo said, "We got to do some things." And I think the changing of Lachlan from an outfielder to a first baseman and Bobby Thompson making him a third baseman, they weren't natural positions for either one of those two. But Leo felt he had to make those changes, and it turned out that they worked and made the Giants a winner in 1951. Doc substantiates, in his autobiography, substantiates the things about Leo. But one thing that I'll add, he didn't think DeRosa was very good with younger players. Willie, of course, was the exception, but DeRosa probably saw the talent that Willie had. DeRosa probably didn't have the patience. DeRosa did not necessarily have a long-term view. Even with the Giants, he's looking like 1949, 1950, 1951. Those are the years I want the Giants to turn around. He's not necessarily looking, say, a five-year or a seven-year plan. Final observations. The Giants were the high point of Leo's career. Some folks still point out that the Dodgers in his period from 1940 to 1947 with the Dodgers, the high point. I would argue that two pennants and a world championship, and actually transforming a team in the period with the Giants was the high point of Leo, and in fact was one of the great managerial jobs of all time. Leo and McGraw, very interesting parallels. Both of them came to New York with a lot of hoopla. Of course, McGraw pulling all his nine Baltimore Orioles with them. A lot of excitement with Giant fans. Some Giant fans not necessarily very happy. Both of them embodying the same kind of philosophy as a manager. Both of them liking the nightlife of New York City. So there are a lot of parallels between McGraw. Has there been another Leo since 1955? Well, maybe Earl Weaver, maybe Billy Martin. But I don't think we'll see managers like Leo anymore. And then I raise an interesting point. What if Ricky would have kept DeRosa and given the Giants Birdshot? I don't think the Giants, we would not have had a shot heard around the world with Birdshot as manager of the Giants. I think Bert would have probably kept the status quo to a great extent. And we wouldn't have had a shot heard around the world or a world champion. Cleveland Indians fans would have been happy about 1954 then, okay? What it made for me is I grew up on a block where all there were Yankee fans and Dodger fans in Jersey City, but it gave me the stature as a Giant fan during this period. Thank you very, very much. Got time for a couple of questions. Yeah, I would agree with that. I would give him a little bit of longer tenure with certain individuals than Martin, and it all. I think the one interesting relationship is with Ricky.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. He actually, even though they're quite different personalities, Ricky really likes DeRosa and wants DeRosa to be his manager. So that's, yeah, I would agree with you, but I would, little caveat that Leo did have a little bit of longer tenure as manager with some teams than Martin did with the Yankees.
Just an observation. I know, we all know about Ted Williams, Hank Greenberg, losing time in the service. Willie Mays lost 2 years, and probably if he played, he probably would have hit over 700 home runs. But nobody really talks about that much.
Oh, yeah. He lost those 2 years in 50 or 51. I'm not sure how many, you know, he wasn't necessarily at the peak of his playing in 50. He wouldn't have been at his peak in 52, but certainly the Mays is, I think the one thing that's amazing about Mays, he comes back from the Army being off for 2 years and wins the batting title in 1954.
DeRosa coming to the Giants in 47, how was it publicized? Was it publicized that he was fired, or was it publicized that he left the Dodgers?
Excuse me?
How was DeRosa going to the Giants publicized at that time? Was it publicized that he had gotten fired?
Well, there was this whole thing about, there's different views of what happened there. But as I said to you, story was, at least in one newspaper report I read, that Stoneham asked Ott to resign, got approval to get DeRosa from National League, then talked to Ricky. And then the next day, there's this story, it's headline story. And what's really publicized is the reaction of the fans to a great degree in all of the New York papers, the tabloids and the New York Times, and their reaction. And the Giants fans, you know, it's somewhat mixed, but more negative than it is positive.
Well, I want to thank Dr. Burbridge and... if you have any more questions for him, I'm sure he'll be glad to talk to you just outside the room. We have another session starting in about 4 minutes. So if you do have questions or don't plan on sticking around for the next session, please go ahead and exit. And we'll get started about 8:30 for the next session. Thank you.